Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you so much for joining us today. Joining me in the studio is CJ Gibson.
What's up?
Steven Rue.
What's up?
And we kicked Sean Finnegan off the show.
We did it.
No, we didn't. He's on a work trip.
That's right.
So that's the real story. On today's show, we're going to be talking about how we feel about the future of Destiny 2 after hearing from Luke Smith. We're going to be talking about the Gambit improvements we would like to see, prompted by a tweet from Cosmo. And you will not believe what they've done to the weapons in PvP. Huge news, everybody. Let me do a 15-minute intro. Like, subscribe. Oh. Hey, I'm doing a giveaway.
Oh, just kidding. Smash cut. Ooh, that's salt.
Let's <Ooh. laughs> I had to make it. I'm just teasing.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I wanted to start the show talking about Luke Smith. He came out and he had this really, really great post. And I'm just going to read it for context for everybody. He said,
"You're going to read the whole thing?"
Yeah, why not? I'll do it quick. "Everyone, I wanted to share three things on behalf of the Destiny team today. First, our sincere thanks to the people at Activision who've helped bring Destiny to our players. High Moon Studios for their wonderful collaboration on Forsaken and Vicarious Visions, who helped establish a Destiny community on PC, worked with us on Warmind, and who is currently readying their Destiny Swan Song with content that will appear in the upcoming season of Redacted. Next, in the short term, we're continuing to build the content we promised for the annual pass. We've learned a lot from Black Armory that we will apply to future releases, most notably that we'd like the beginning experiences of content drops to be a better point of convergence for the player base. In Black Armory, we set the power requirement for the first forge too high, and that meant it wasn't a great chance to jump into some new content. We want to find the line between new content that many players can play and aspirational content for players to progress forward. We're exploring improvements to catch up mechanics for players in upcoming seasons." Trying my best to look at the camera and read off a piece of paper. It's a little.
You're doing good. You got
last,
this.
Long term, Bungie is committed to Destiny. We created the universe and we hold its future entirely in our hands. The vast majority of the team is hard at work envisioning future experiences, enemies, and ways to play the Guardian you've been building since 2014. We're going to keep doing that. We're thinking about what it means to be truly independent, what it means to self-publish, and crucially, what Destiny's future can now look like for our players. It was a busy fall, and it is going to be a busy year. See you soon, Luke."
Yep.
I thought that was really, really excellent post for him, and that's why I wanted to read it in his entirety. Thank you, Luke Smith, or the people, at least the people at Bungie who probably listen to this show. Luke's too busy working. thank you for that. I like seeing this sort of sincerity, and it meant a lot for me to see somebody at that level take the time to write something like that and just saying, "Hey, we care about this franchise. We have a lot to learn, we're making new enemies.
Yeah. We have, yeah.
And we're listening to you guys. So I wanted to ask, let's start long term. How do you feel? Because short term, we know what's coming. We're going to go through Season of Redacted.
Yeah.
And then we're going to move into this new Activision free Bungie Destiny world. And it's going to be an interesting place for them, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And for us as players.
Well, so, and then the last little line here, and I'm glad you said, didn't say it because I can save it. When I look ahead and think about Destiny, where it could go, I see a bright future with roots in a memorable past. Not everything has been lost in the dark corners of time. So two Vogue references from Luke in the span of 1 week. Last time, obviously, when they made the announcement, what was the line he used? Guardians make their own fate.
Yep.
Really good. So I keep thinking, yeah, there's a bunch of things, obviously, that they're probably going through internally. It's nice to see him acknowledging also the studios that were involved, like Vicarious Visions and High Moon Studios with PC ports and everything like that. Now thinking, yeah, where will we go in Destiny 2 again? It does feel like maybe there's a vault or some kind of other space in Destiny 1 maybe on the horizon coming. I mean, I like those. I don't know about you guys, but I've never understood the rehashed, I don't want to see Destiny 1 content anymore.
Oh, no, I would love it if they just, hey, Destiny 1's in Destiny 2 now. You can do all the stuff that you can do in
D1. The full game.
Yeah, or at least the raids.
People,
parts of the experience.
Well, the people that do complain about that is when you have to pay for that content. That
gotcha.
You paid for.
Okay, so give me an example of what that means. Like, because right now they're doing PvP maps pretty much for free regardless. Like, that's not included anymore. So that doesn't apply. So give me an example of where that does apply.
Well, I was just saying it for reference. Like, I was thinking after this year passed, usually the cadence is we have the mini DLCs and then the big fall DLC, right?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have to stick to that anymore as far as we know.
You're right.
So I was thinking as soon as they're done with the Season of the Redacted, they could bring back like all the old raids, 60 FPS,
PC,
and just stuff like that, but for free. And then they could just focus on Destiny 3 instead of working on like a big Destiny 2 DLC. But the problem is if you bring back all the old raids and you go, oh, it's like $40, then I think people would have a problem with it.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. I guess so what I'm saying is, I don't know if you agree with this or not, Destin, I liked going back to the tower for that first opening mission and Prison of Elders as well. With we actually wrote down the mission, the Warden of Nothing. I thought that was really cool. Now, again, it was a reskin a little bit. You didn't play Prison of Elders. Mm-hmm. It was going back to that moment. Those little callbacks to Destiny 1, I love them.
I love that.
I don't have a problem with that.
I had a reaction to it.
Yeah.
I think we were streaming together and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. It's Prison of Elders.
Absolutely.
I liked that particular integration. To be honest, Steven, if they brought back all the raids and had it as an optional piece of content that you could pay $20 for if you wanted to play that content and somehow had it separate from core progression, I don't think the community would have as much of a problem as you think because they know they're supporting Bungie directly.
So there you go.
It's not
iffy.
About Activision. Right?
That's iffy. Though.
But that's the thing. Like, that's where, to me, that it's funny that you say that. That psychology I talked a little bit about last show, that is weird that now that it does seem like it's Bungie, that there's a perception difference of that, and you think maybe not.
Well, I don't mind paying that, whatever they'd charge for old raids like that, but I think there is a perception that even though they're away from Activision, it's like I paid 100-something bucks for all these raids in Destiny 1 in the totality, and now I have to pay again for the same raids? That doesn't make sense.
I think they already have something planned with revisiting the old raids that'll probably happen in Season of the Redacted. Season of the Redacted has the raid sweeper bot that we all discovered. Sorry, spoiler warning, if you haven't finished the first raid in D2.
Yeah.
But they've sort of teased that he's working together with the Emperor, right?
Yeah.
Kallus, yeah.
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 And I would not be surprised if we end up revisiting that old piece of content by Season of the Redacted.
Yeah.
Looking forward to after that, though. That would be the future for me.
Yeah. I mean,
and I don't know if they're just going to bring back all the old raids.
See, I don't think they would because
I don't think they would either.
There's something to be said about like just glimpses of nostalgia. Like those moments, I think, are super powerful because, you know, you were attached to the tower and that homecoming mission in the intro, we talk about the campaign not having memorable moments sometimes, like we've said that on the show. That moment at the reveal event, still by far the best moment in Destiny, but it was but it was at the reveal event. So it felt like we saw it. But even when you got a chance to play through it,
I don't think there's anything else that touches that moment because your tower was your home.
Yeah.
And it was destroyed. And when you're walking through it in that situation where it's on fire and Zavala's getting there and then you see Ikora, yeah, it's emotional, but it's hard to do that over and over again. So I don't think they'll lean into bringing a bunch of Destiny 1 content back, but I think they'll bring like little touches of it, or maybe it's a part in VOG or something like that that they bring back.
Yeah, I think people harp on the story so much, partially because there are moments in the context that are a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I still think it's a huge step up from where we're at with Destiny 1. I understand what happened in the core Destiny story. Tower got attacked. We built up a base in the farm, which we've never gone to since.
Yeah.
What's up with that? And then, you know, we came back and we defeated Gaul.
Yeah.
And the Traveler woke up.
Yeah.
And I remember all that. And there's still the mystery of what those shapes are.
Yeah.
I think the issue people take is just like I feel like that plot line is never revisited again within Destiny 2. It's obviously for Destiny 3. And that's sort of weird because we never got the continuation or the answer to those mysteries for quite some time now. And then Forsaken just totally disregards them entirely.
Yeah.
Cade's dead. And then stuff's going on with Mara Sov.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not all in the main part of the game. It's like additional on the side.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that's been one of your complaints. I will say, yeah, when you revealed the tower for the first time and it was a new section of the tower, it was super cool to look up and see the other place just kind of like charred off in the distance in that side. Even that tower reveal moment was pretty cool. But yeah, it's hard to create those over and over again. But I think revisiting something from Destiny 1 would do that. But yeah, I'm curious to know as well what people would like to see. I think something from a raid would be cool. I don't think they'll do the raid verbatim.
So to bring it back to the question at hand, how do we feel about the future of Destiny? Immediate, I don't think a lot's going to change. I think we're going to get the rollout plan through Season of the Redacted. And long term, I'm a little nervous only because Bungie has a lot of the business stuff to figure out, distribution and such, and they've admitted that publicly.
Yes.
Who knows what we're going to get for the next version of the game, because Vicarious Visions, you know, did the PC version. They were hugely instrumental in making that happen. So. Yep. How do they make that happen again now that that relationship's sort of severed? I have a lot of curiosities about what they have facing them challenge-wise.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful, though, and I'm willing to see what they're able to do with it. How are you guys feeling? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad they've addressed those, because I think between their weekly updates as well as like Deej and other people tweeting those things out, it's like, yeah, people are wondering about publishing this and that. They seem obviously confident that they can do that.
Yeah.
So that's reassuring that they feel that way. And I think, just moving forward, a lot of what maybe Luke's referencing, I don't think that will happen until like this September. But I do think that will probably be like some kind of big content things story-wise this September.
That's really interesting for me to hear you say. I don't think they're going to do anything this September.
Really? Okay.
I think they're going to shatter that content release cadence that they had.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Okay.
And change it up.
So when you say that, maybe not this September, but I definitely think probably before the end of the year. I think they'll maybe do, because the way he explained it, or the way I heard it, is that they obviously like the drip feed sort of content that we're talking about right now, there's definitely this preconceived idea that if you're not into the game, that you have to do a lot of little things to get into it. And so I think they'll do maybe like a bit more of an initial like release. Like I think they realized that like creating a power level that was too high and then maybe not having strikes or anything new to do at first was probably a mistake. Mm-hmm. I think they'll do a little bit more of that, whether or not it's big and a massive story. I think there'll be something.
Do you think they still have a partnership with Activision to do massive updates to a platform like Destiny 2, like huge story content things? Like, I don't know how that agreement being severed affects their ability to update the product that is Destiny 2. Like, do they have to just launch Destiny 3 at this point for their next major thing? Because they could probably get away with an annual pass.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know. Vicarious Visions will support them through September, but after September.
Yeah.
I mean, I figure if they were planning on a big DLC this fall, it would make more sense for them to kind of just scrap that and kind of merge that into what they're working with Destiny 3. I don't know. That seems like a very feasible possibility to me.
But that means you basically think that Destiny 2, quote, quote, will end its support this September? I mean, I don't
know. No.
Right?
No, I'm saying we just won't get any big DLC this September. I think we'll get like little events like from the live team.
Right. But when you say little events, do you think another annual pass type thing?
I do. I think we'll probably see another annual pass, and that'll give them enough of a buffer to do a major content drop.
Yeah, I don't – sorry, I guess to be clear then, I don't expect a Forsaken-style thing, but I expect maybe something like the way Warmind was that launches it and then has the annual pass kind of piecemeal out for the rest of the year. Like I think they realized not having anything quote-unquote new within the context of story right off the bat was probably a mistake. But I don't think it needs to be major if they're going to commit to doing an annual pass again. Like I think there's like a fine balance of the two things that they're doing. Like,
I mean,
like one or the other.
Whatever they decide to do, whether they keep going with Destiny 2, I think they're just going to make a new Destiny. It might not be called Destiny 3, but I think they are going to make a new standalone title. I think that is what the public is looking forward to right now. I think right now that they realize Destiny 2 is, it's already being in the works. Like the split from Activision is not going to change anything drastically in Destiny 2.
Yeah.
The next standalone Destiny title is what we're going to see what Bungie's really made out of.
Yes.
Yeah. Timeline-wise, are we about due for a Destiny 3? Because they had their major content drop. I think we're supposed to go like another year, like based on the Activision schedule.
We
then
should,
it would have launched next, not this September, the September after
we
that.
Should be getting, we should have been getting a Destiny 3 in 2020, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could see it being like early 2021.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. That launch window is a little bit, you know, it's always pretty dicey in that September, even November space, just from like a competitive standpoint. But yeah, thinking of this time with Destiny 1, it would have been Rise of Iron coming up
in September.
In this September. So, but, and
no,
that
would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rise of Iron would have been this September, and that would have brought us through to next year.
And that was a pretty big update in and of itself.
Didn't Rise of Iron come out in the spring, though?
Yeah.
This annual pass kind of didn't?
No.
I think Rise of Iron came out in September. That was their big launch.
Yeah.
And then they did the new raids, and they did like, and they were like, this is it for Destiny until September. And then they had this long gap where, you could still play Destiny 1, and Trials was still on.
Yes.
So people were still playing D1.
Yeah. Oh, and they re-released the raids at the very end, and that was sometime in
They still
like
have to
May.
Bring back Trials. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, and faction rallies.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So there's a bunch of things I think that they can lean into. But yeah, I mean, think about all the things that were in Warmind, or I keep saying Warmind. Rise of Iron, there was a lot of things from Crucible updates to those private matches added. Mm-hmm. There was a new game mode that maybe people not super fond of. The Collection.
Supremacy.
Yeah. And it's weird that some of those things launched at the beginning of D2 and then now are even gone. So they could bring that Sparrow Racing League. Like, there's a bunch of things that people, I think, have commented. I saw a comment saying, hey, mention Sparrow Racing League. I didn't care for it. But within the within the context of it being a little bit outside of the norm of, hey, we're running around shooting things, it was actually kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. We didn't bring it up last week. I saw you in the comments talking about it. And I also forgot to bring it up. Cross progression. And I think the best way to do that is sort of like the Epic style thing where you're able to link all your accounts to your Fortnite account. And then you can just play your same character across all platforms.
Yes.
It would be amazing if Destiny 2 did that. Because then, like, you won't have that problem with people feeling excluded.
That's exactly it. I mean, people were saying, oh, what about crossplay? I'm not so concerned about crossplay because I own all the consoles. Like, I own an Xbox. I have, you know, PlayStation and PC. So I play them on everything. It'd be nice if it was, but between the two, definitely cross progression to be able to actually play with your account on PlayStation or Xbox players and not feel the need to grind to do that. Crossplay, too. I mean, do both. But if you're going to do one or the other,
cross progression is.
Yeah.
Crossplay is definitely a lot more trickier because you have the higher frame rate on PC, and then I don't know if...
That's the reason why I think it'd be an issue.
Yeah.
Like, Fortnite gave people the model for how to do that, though, right?
Yeah, and they broke down the barrier with Xbox and PlayStation being able to play together, so that was huge. So I definitely don't think crossplay will ever be a thing in Destiny, but definitely cross-progression could definitely be a reality.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next topic, we're going to talk about Gambit. And if Ronnie will go to the one, I will address that question. There we go. Thank you, Ronnie. All right. So Gambit, a call was put out by Cosmo, and he wants to know what improvements we would like to see in the mode Gambit for Destiny 2. And I wanted to pose it to you guys. What do you want to see changed in Gambit? Because for me, it's a really difficult question to answer. I love Gambit. My main problem is with Queensbreaker.
Right.
Right? That was the only thing. And the only other aspect that I could think of was the team related play when you go in solo.
Right.
Yeah, like a way exactly. to sort of have better communication within solo play.
Yeah. That's always a thing. I think people, I mean, we play a little bit of competitive PvP. I'm on that Not Forgotten grind. And when you're talking about solo queuing versus like getting into a four stack, mm-hmm. it does change how the game feels. The reason why, obviously, is if you were solo queuing, you could be waiting forever to potentially only find another solo player. And that might take, you know, the enjoyment out of sitting there for 20 minutes while you're waiting for that to populate. But yes, that would be a definite plus. How do they fix that, though, without it? Yeah, like being a negative impact to the experience. And that's tricky. Like, I don't know if that can be solved right away.
Yeah, I mean, Gambit's biggest issues, I think, have to do with what Dustin said. It's a solo versus team-based game. And if you're with all solos against a well-coordinated team, the chances you're already at a disadvantage because they're communicating.
Yeah.
And then you have to, like, think about it this way. Like, if you're playing as a team and you tell your teammates, just bank five and go, bank five and go. And then you have your...
You will win.
Yeah.
That's the strat.
And that's another thing that they need to change. But if you're with three blueberries and the guy's trying to get 15 and then every time an invader spawns, he just goes for the 15. Yeah, you're just at a huge disadvantage. Yep. So it's marred by that. But like you said, you can't really separate team-based matchmaking with squad or solo-based match. There's just, I don't think the population's there for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I had an idea, Steven, just talking about that. Could the drifter be louder for the person who has 15 motes and won't put them into the machine? Put your motes in the thing now! Well, hey, Guardian!
So the way you combat that is...
I'm talking to you! Bank your motes!
Put your motes in now.
Stop whatever you're shooting. Just take away their ability to shoot anything.
Oh, exactly. You're winning.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to get rid of the people who insist on trying to get 15, but I think you need to alter mechanics. So my laundry list of what you need to change in Gambit is, I think the wall hack system when you invade is too strong. It should be a pulse.
Yep.
That combined with heavy ammo, it's just too good because you have a machine gun or a Queensbreakers or sleeper. You can tell when the enemy is going to peek a wall or whatever. Mm-hmm. You just pre-fire. It's way too strong. What else? There needs to be an incentive because right now the optimal strategy is bank five.
Yeah.
And just keep putting pressure on.
Yeah.
There needs to be an incentive to get to 10, get to 15. Because the Ogre, honestly to me, the difference between the Cabal, the Hive Knight, and the Ogre—it's like minimal.
The shield guys suck.
The blockers are the worst, and they're five because if you get close to them, they bounce you back, so you almost need a shotgun. So
but it's like
I would rather get an Ogre or a Knight than a blocker.
Me too,
because they have those dumb shields.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's the shields that are annoying, but health wise, it's scaled that way.
Yeah,
and the Ogre does kick you back a bit, but like. It's not a problem, really, if you have a good team. It all comes back to the solos versus team.
Yeah.
But they need to find a way to incentivize getting to 10 and 15.
Yes.
They need to change how the wall hack works.
Yeah.
And I also think it's funny because we talked about it even before Gambit came out. Me and CJ voiced our concerns about
melting.
Yeah. Melting the primeval, and
we all did.
Yeah,
yeah. And lo and behold, the number one issue is there's no fun when you just boss melt. Yeah. And it's funny because after we said that, we got a lot of crap in the comments for saying like, "Why would you want to?"
Oh, we're gonna get a lot of apologies this episode. Don't worry, Steven.
you guys made good points.
I saw a lot of like,
"Why would you punish optimal strategy?" Blah blah. Okay, it's optimal. Yeah, like obviously you want to. Melt the boss, but it's not a fun gameplay loop when you do that.
Yeah.
So they need to do something like the meatball where there's immunity factors.
Barriers to just melting.
Yes. And
that's the thing. We talked about it on the E3 episode of Fireteam Chat. Mm-hmm. It was me, you, Fran, and Sean. We mentioned that part exclusively. Then there was another episode that Steven was on, and we mentioned it prior to Gambit launching at the Gambit weekend when they did it free. And yeah, the gating part with Meatball is nice because it triggers this thing that doesn't allow him to be instant melted. That needs to be there. That's what we were talking about. It's not the primeval buffs are nice, but the issue is if your whole team dies and his health goes back to the start and you're at like primeval slayer buff 9, if you have super saved, he's dead. Yeah. Like sometimes you're like, oh, don't worry, guys. Oh, dear God, they casted a super. And then you watch the bar just deplete in 2 seconds.
It's like, Teddy, you ready? Yeah, melting, done. Exactly. You know, Teddy, by the way, I saw people asking chat, who is Teddy?
He doesn't
Teddy is
CJ's
somebody that plays with
CJ's
all of
imaginary
us.
Friend.
It's CJ's imaginary friend.
No, but like the optimal strategy right now is you summon the primeval, you get like your melting point, all that saved up. You wait for that first invade, kill that first invade, and then melt.
Yes.
When you have an optimal strategy like that with a team, it's easy. But
and I love it.
Yeah. But if you have, if you're playing with blueberries and you realize once you get to a certain point in his health, he's going to turn immune. You have to shoot the immunity orbs.
Yes.
The blueberries understand, like, he's immune. I hope they understand.
I don't know.
But then, then it becomes less of a, all right, melting point, wall of radiance, of synthes�. It becomes less of that and more on shooting and evading. And I think you should get more primeval health when you kill an invader. Or when you kill someone invading.
Like it adds more health to them.
Because the fun part when we played at E3, we had a limited sandbox. We didn't have tractor can or any of that stuff.
But that's what we said, and that was why.
Yeah, that's what we said. Yeah. And after we played, we said like it's
imagine
fun.
This with tractor.
Yeah, it's exactly. Fun in this sandbox, but once you get escalation protocol shotgun and all that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the fun parts of the E3 demo were people were constantly invading back and forth, and they didn't have heavy ammo.
They didn't get queen.
They just had rocket launchers. Yeah, they had rocket launcher and a grenade launcher, so it became more of gunplay and super play than just spawn and kill four people with queen breakers.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm kind of in the same boat. I think we think that there should be some kind of gate mechanic at each bar of health. Once you maybe take the bar of health down, then the only way it goes back up is obviously when you get deaths. But if it does go back up, you'd need to do that mechanic again for each bar of health, right? So I think that'd be good. Cosmo did tweet this. This is where this topic's coming from.
Yep.
I replied basically – I was pulling up stuff on my phone here. So I personally would love to see, blocker enemy variants change depending on the map and or enemy type. So basically right now it's those same three all the time.
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah, like if you were playing on a Vex map or if you're playing on whatever, that you would actually see different taken characters just in the blocker variant when you're putting them in just to change up the gameplay a little bit. Like I think that would be kind of nice. I can't remember what's the triumph called when everybody banks 15 emotes at the or 15 emotes.
Oh, I don't know what it's called.
That's fine.
So we did that one time, and it was odd because one time we did it, and I panicked, and I was like, no, wait! And then somebody deposited, and I was like, ah. But we did it after, and it gives you the triumph. So clearly they have that mechanism in the game. Mm-hmm. If there was some way maybe for two people to bank 15 simultaneously, there could maybe be some kind of reward that would help you in that primeval phase. Could be a buff, could be something, but if I think they allowed
like
something
team coordination
like that,
rewards?
Yes, it'd be team coordination. So it doesn't dramatically impact it, but if you know that that's there, there's an incentive to bank 15, because right now there's not. You're at a bigger risk. There's not enough advantage for you to carry 15 motes. So I think it would incentivize people to do that. And I think it also just maybe help be an extra little gameplay dynamic in it. And then the last thing, I think there needs, without trials, be nice if there's some kind of little trials reward where you played maybe a 5-gambit card, and after that, if you went to a new location, that'd be cool. But even if a treasure chest spawned in the middle and then you opened it up and you had a chance at a curated piece of armor and or weapon would be cool. Because right now, how many masterwork or what are they called now?
Infusion
cores.
Infusion.
Just say masterwork.
Masterwork core or enhancement cores.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, how many do you have? Like
130.
Okay, so I only have like 10 or 20. And if I got a whole bunch of...
What are you doing with them?
Well, I want to infuse my gear because it ends up being like a look/stat game, and I can never have another game.
Let's get into it.
Anyways.
Just as a human, I think I find something that works, and then I just use that until someone's like, maybe you should tweak this. Then I'm like, maybe. I don't know. I feel a little uncomfortable.
But that's what I mean. You're sitting on all this stuff, and I'm like, I like the way this looks. Oh, but this has the perk I need. Oh,
okay, before we get into that masterwork debate,
anyways,
I had an idea. If you bang 15 at the same time, right now the invasion portal opens at 25, 50, 75.
Yeah.
Maybe if like two people bang 15 at the same time, the invasion portal just opens.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd have 30, but regardless.
Regardless.
I think that would be pretty, pretty powerful for each team. It probably has to be three with 15 or something.
I mean,
maybe. Yeah,
so you spawn a huge blocker and you get to invade?
Yeah,
or,
but it's high risk because like...
Yeah,
because you can tell. Mm. I mean, good players in Gambit can tell
how many
modes
the
other team has.
Yeah,
and then
the
gray bar.
Yeah, so like you see that white gray bar, you're going
yeah,
in there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
So, but yeah, so there's a bunch of things, but I think Gambit is a fun game mode. It's rather on the long side. I think people feel that way about it. And so I don't know if reducing the motes helps or maybe having, some other just damage to the primeval being done. Anyways, a lot of these things, they were just asking for suggestions. So we're throwing it out there. Play a lot of Gambit. Yeah. It's fun. But I think the incentive, like I wish there was like a trial situation or different rewards, which would help.
Back to your masterwork topic.
Make the drifters shout louder things when people have 15 motes. Or if you're ready to spawn the primeval, like figure out a way to just give him more dialogue that he incessantly shouts at those players until they either bank their motes or spawn the primeval.
He shouts at the lowest team, the lowest scoring team member. Hey, pick up the slack.
It's funny because
stop dying.
It's funny because Lars, the senior designer on Gambit, told me before the Drifter was actually meaner.
Really?
Oh, yeah, right. He was really mean to the losing team.
I like that.
They toned him down.
Oh, losing team, try better.
Do better. Losing team.
He told me they drastically toned him down.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear what it used to be like.
Yeah.
Losing team. Maybe you should play something else.
Exactly.
That'd be funny. But I want to go back to your Masterwork.
Have you tried Crucible?
I want to go back to your Masterwork thing. It's fine in terms of weapons because the weapons you can use on all three characters. My biggest gripe with the Masterwork cores for armor is once you infuse armor, it takes so much of your inventory or materials.
Yeah.
And then let's say you get something like 10 minutes later that looks cool, that's better. You just wasted all those materials. So I haven't masterworked a single piece of armor.
There you go.
I masterworked. Yeah.
Why?
But yeah, there's very little to no incentive.
Because you get extra damage.
Well, you get the super.
Super.
Well, yes, that's fair.
So.
No, but that's a thing. None of us have done it.
It's just too
for Crucible
costly.
Sets.
Well, but that's the thing, right? And if you want to start playing like that and min-maxing, there's some value to that. But like Steven's saying, you're not going to dump all your freaking enhancement cores when they're super rare to get. But if you got those things curated out of that game mode and you could break it down and get the cores back, it's just another incentive play to get
like
more of those.
I have my PvE set, my Gambit set, my PvP set. I'd love to masterwork my armor set for all those, but there's always that one armor piece that I would rather wear. And if I get the roll, then I'm going to wear that. But I don't want to dump all those resources because of primary ammo finder on my chest piece.
So, yes.
primary ammo.
One reason you might do that is because of the super and weapon changes coming to PvP.
Nice.
We're
going
to transition into right now. So some big changes have come to the weapon and armor items in Destiny 2 and supers. So we're going to get into those. CJ, you have many, many notes from the weekly update here.
There's only one important one, Destin. Make Quiver great again. They heard me.
They are.
Oh, really? What are they doing?
They are making it. It looks like it could be getting a damage buff to Mobius Quiver. They haven't said if it's going to track
hitting an enemy will kill them.
Hopefully. That's what the hope is.
You hit an enemy in the face, they will die.
If you headshot him. So right now, currently, that is how Quiver works.
Read this, though.
Don't break it, Steven. Don't break it for me.
Entire damage bonus is applied on the first hit instead of stacking and multiplying. Does that mean I can one-shot in Quiver?
I don't know. But if it doesn't,
would be nice.
I'm going to be upset. Okay.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
If Golden Gun one-shots, Quiver should one-shot.
It should.
It's a super.
Not only that, it's way harder to use. Yeah. Who's going, hey, man, check it out. I'm the Quiver King. Nobody but me. Nobody is saying that. And not to mention, think of how.
Please send fan artwork to Fireteam Chat or Destiny at IGN.
It was a Robin Hood guy who was in the Twitter. But it's way harder to use Quiver. And right now, it doesn't even eliminate the super most of the time. Like, if you even direct impact, it takes it away. But in Destiny 1 Quiver, you could hit it like roughly around them. It was a smaller radius, but now it doesn't even usually work to take the super away. So at least needs to be one hit.
Yeah.
All right, done. Rant over.
There was one that I saw in here that I was interested in. Where is it? Telesto.
Thank God.
Thank the heavens.
There it
Telesto
is.
Was so on fun to go up against the PvP, and I'm like, all right, they're all using Telesto. Should we get our Telestos and make this really not fun?
Yeah.
The community was pretty happy about Wave Splitter, too. We're on PC, so we've never played with Wave Splitter. Where is it? But
is that the PlayStation
it's
exclusive?
The Void, it's the Void Trace Rifle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's the PlayStation exclusive, but apparently it's bonkers.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I just got Jotun Am I saying that right?
Jotun? Yeah, we heard.
Jotun.
Yeah, did you know that I got Jotun?
You got Redrix also? And what was that Redrix other gun?
Lunas Howl.
So on that not forgotten
that was so
rhyme.
Two seasons ago.
thanks, Kevin. No, it was one of those things where when I got Jotun, I felt bad because I was doing it with Strike Grinder Brian Malkowitz and my imaginary friend Teddy. It was really weird because they had grinded it out for like all six times, and then I jump in there and do it and get it on the first try, and I actually did feel bad. And then, yeah, Sean was like, oh, that makes up for your no hawk moon. I was like, it does not make up for the no hawk moon all year one. Yeah, but Jotun is pretty cool.
I haven't had Jotun yet. But what do you think about these changes?
Yeah, these seem good. I mean, it's funny. Telesto is one of those weapons where this goes back to the whole PvE versus PvP conversation chat that Sean and I have argued about where yeah, it does eliminate some of that cool factor in PvE if they don't make adjustments separately for PvP. And PvP was broken, and I'm a fusion guy. Mm-hmm. It was broken. You'd stick somebody, it would like hit their toe, and then they would die going around a corner.
Yeah, it's,
I'm glad it's nerfed overall.
Yep. I hopped onto PlayStation 4 PvP on Destiny 1 a few days ago, and I was like, oh, good. I was kind of good on PlayStation 4. not great, but I did okay on PS4, and I'm not a big PvP guy anymore. I don't know what's happened. I saw a thread on Reddit today that really resonated with me where they also talked about like how Iron Banner just something's off, like something's less incentivizing to continue playing it. I do like running through Iron Banner with my friends and getting the wins and getting the tokens and but like the armor set's not great this time around.
Yeah.
I really like the year one armor set with the different variations on them.
I didn't
like and now they're useless. Like you would never put on that armor set. So I put in all that work. And I think that's the thing. They keep retiring your old gear.
Yeah. Yes.
So today I'm sitting here and you guys are like, oh, there's plenty of stuff you could do. And I'm like, why? They're going to retire it in what, a month?
That's
when the next piece of content comes out?
They always have that issue.
So, like, so why am I going to do the chase when the chase is going to be eliminated as
they really need here. They really need to bring a static role that you can pull out of your collections.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll fix the vault space problem almost immediately.
It would.
They really do.
It's funny because when you look back at even Trials and Destiny 1 when they did that, they started including some of the old gear from year 1 and 2 at the later stages in Rise of Iron. I think you could actually get most of the Trials year 1 and 2 gear.
They put it in the loot.
They put it in the loot pool. So it's like I feel like that would actually be kind of nice if it identified that you got all the new set, potentially, to get the old set. Like, cause like you say, if you can't add any of those new mods to it, which you can't, that obsoletes it. And,
They need to just, need to open year one.
Yeah, but some of that's intentional. Like, some of like the raid, like Midnight Coup, and you not having those weapons.
Yeah, like, those weapons were so cool. And, like, I'm like, why did I? So, like, the realization that they continuously do this has de-incentivized me to continue playing to chase these new things. Like, Jotun?
Yeah.
I'll grind for that very casually because I feel like they're just going to nerf it by the time I get it at this point.
That's another conversation that's happening. People are going, like, don't nerf it because, again, I've said this, like, when you don't get it, and then for like 4 or 5 months, you want to use it, and then you finally get it when it's a nerf. Like, I understand them being delayed on sandbox changes, but there is something to be said about, when you're nerfing and buffing, and then this weapon, this coveted weapon that you want is nerfed when you get it a few months later, that kind of sucks. And I don't know how they fix that, though.
Yeah. I'm at this point with Destiny where I feel like I've experienced all of the content that they have to offer right now. I've done all the quest to unlock all the forges. Mm-hmm. I've thrown all the balls at all the forges to power them up, and then I killed the final boss and all those. I went through all the quest lines, and now Last Word's coming up, right?
Yeah.
Lore-wise, I'm intrigued by the story that they're going to tell tied to Last Word.
Yeah.
But grind-wise, I'm concerned that it's not going to be compelling based on what we've experienced with unlocking the forges.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned in that respect. Are you guys excited about Last Word? Because for me, I play with it in Destiny 1. It's a PvP gun. I'm a PvE guy for the most part. And for me, I'm just sort of like, maybe I'll get it, or I could just watch you guys do it or whatever.
Yeah, so the chase is not there for you. Yeah. I was, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of people who rave about Last Word. I was not a huge Last Word guy. Sean loved it. I liked Hawk Moon better. But again, I think it's because I was chasing it. But yeah, that's fair. I mean, there's some merit to that. I think, knowing what we went through to open the forges, that is a concern now, because it felt like once you get the forge open and you're playing the forge and all that stuff, it's actually pretty good. Like that grind to get powerful weapons, I dig that. Like, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it's a good loop.
Yeah, it's a good loop. Opening it up, though, yeah, that felt tedious. And it feels like if there's no kind of story invested in that experience, which I don't think that they'll do that for Last Word. Like, hopefully not.
There'll be lore-based stuff. But if it's just dialogue that I can read online.
Yeah.
Like, all the Black Armory stuff that you have to get, by the way, by failing the Go Fan and Forge, I believe.
The easiest way to do it
is to fail it repeatedly. Yeah, that's crazy, man. The only way that I can get that context of what happened with Ada, which is an excellent story, by the way.
Yeah.
Which I read online on that Reddit compiled because I realized, oh, that's going to take me 10 hours to fail Go Fan and Forge over and over again with my lowest light gear on. Like, that. Like, that's not a great way to expose your audience to your fantastic story about Ada and fleshing out that character more.
Yeah.
Well, even the prince coming back as a guardian is hidden.
Yeah.
If you didn't do well that week, you wouldn't know.
Yeah. And I hope we hear a little bit about more of that storyline, like, prior to September.
I don't expect to hear that.
I don't think we will. I don't think we will either. But it would be nice. Maybe, hopefully, there's a tie-in to maybe this Last Word.
That's everything that I really want to talk about, the weapons. I just want to make sure you guys had opportunity to discuss any of the other changes. We sort of touched on the supers changing, like
there's a lot.
The Warlock buffing, Void.
Yeah.
They're buffing Dawnblade. Like, what in the world?
I know. Dude,
really?
It already goes
the
so
The super
fast.
Duration is increased for Dawnblade. That's nuts.
Yeah.
They buffed sniper rifles. I can't find the note.
Yeah,
that's needed, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Increase the damage on the rapid fire archetype to be able to kill in two body shots.
Yeah.
So that
I will say that is excellent. I would say snipers have not felt right in Destiny 2.
In Destiny 1, you could two body shot
everything.
And another thing that
I would snipe in Destiny 1, and I am a terrible sniper.
Yeah, you could two body shot in Destiny 1. It was a lot more satisfying. And another thing that you still can't do in Destiny 2, except with a couple of sniper rifles, you used to be able to run sniper in Destiny 1 to counter supers.
Yes, with a headshot.
Yeah, you can't headshot kill supers anymore with a sniper rifle. And you can't. I was a shotgun main in Destiny 1, and I would love pushing supers, roaming supers, and shotgun meleeing them. And you could kill them if you hit enough pellets. You can't do that anymore in Destiny 2.
Right.
Supers are. They feel like.
They feel super.
They feel super, but there's no more outplaying supers anymore, in my opinion. It's
right.
Just you kind of run.
Yeah. No. And that's the other thing, especially with non-projectile supers, like the Hunter one, help me, the Spectral Blades.
Spectral Blades, yeah.
I mean, it's really fast, and I love that you can bridge the gap fast, and I do like that. But I don't know how many times I just see people, when I activate the super, jump off the map.
Oh, yeah.
It happens so many times.
I'll do that. I've done that. Just like, no, you're not going to get a kill.
Yeah.
Sorry.
In Destiny 1, there definitely was a skill gap and a gameplay mechanic where you could outplay and outcounter supers with just your guns. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They feel way too good.
And maybe, and maybe that's where some of those, like, if you have the arc mods or the, you know, the void mods increase with your armor, there's maybe a better play to do that, where if you have that, there's a bigger super buff. If they decrease maybe the damage that you're taking in the super.
Like, give incentive to.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one, I mean, you could always team shoot. Usually when a arc strider, for example, is running at your team, I'm like, everybody just team shoot him, we're gonna be fine.
Yeah, but that's because he's so slow, right? Like, and then if you can get those people, you just wait and you're like, oh, he's gonna run after us. But I think that's the reason why they did the bow staff twirling thing, is because you just wait, and then sometimes you can just walk close to that and hope. But you're right, there's enough supers where it feels like if you're not throwing a projectile, you just run.
So nobody uses that anymore. They use the invisible blade thing.
The best.
Yeah.
Wait till you get Guishan's back.
Is that everything, you guys?
Yeah, I think so, man.
All right. Yep. Well, thank you guys for joining the show.
You're welcome.
Sean out doing work. Whatever. Yeah, that's all we have for you this time. We'd love to hear your thoughts on any of the topics that we discussed today. But for us, that's it for this time. Until next time, Guardians out.
I almost said fire team shout out.
It works.
The
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.